Thousands of veterans from the Second World War assembled for what some called a last reunion on the Mall here in Washington, D.C. this Memorial Day weekend. Some will travel soon to France to mark the 60th anniversary of D-Day. Amid these living memories, some may find it hard to understand why thousands of younger Americans don replica uniforms to reenact D-Day on Virginia Beach or the Battle of the Bulge in Maryland. While we've become accustomed to Revolutionary and Civil War reenactors, there is a distinct group that focuses on the wars of the 20th century, including trench raids from the Western Front of the First World War and skirmishes between American grunts and Viet Cong guerrillas. If you have questions about this hobby, give us a call. We'd be especially interested to hear from those of you who participate in 20th century reenactments. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now is Jenny Thompson. She's the author of War Games Inside the World of 20th Century War Reenactors. And she was with us by phone from her home in Evanston, Illinois. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil. Hi.
Hi. You began getting interested in this. You were a PhD in American Studies at the University of Maryland, and you were researching the ways in which 20th century war has been represented and remembered in American culture. Obviously, 20th century reenactors, obviously an intriguing subject for you.
Oh, absolutely. And it's funny because although I had that interest as an academic, I had no idea that these 20th century war reenactors even existed, and actually just stumbled upon them by coincidence in going to an academic conference. And I was really shocked that people reenact World War I, and even further shocked to learn that they do World War II, and then finally really blown away that they do Vietnam. So it was really quite an intriguing phenomenon that really drew me in.
It's a hobby. You came to the conclusion that this hobby developed out of the more familiar Civil War reenactments.
That's right. And American Civil War reenacting really got a boost during the centennial commemorations of the American Civil War in the 1960s. And many current 20th century war reenactors started off Civil War reenacting and then decided for various reasons that they wanted to do more modern wars. And so they sort of broke away and started to reenact these more modern wars.
One of the things that we discover in your book is, I guess, every hobby that gets intense enough develops its own language, its own argot. There were controversies in these reenactment groups between the hardcores and the farbs. What are the hardcores and what are the farbs?
Well, those are the sort of two extremes as far as authenticity goes in the hobby. The farbs are those who are considered inauthentic for various reasons, whether it's through, you know, bad behavior or attitude. They may have bad uniforms. And then the hardcores are those who consider themselves expressly authentic. But in reality, when you examine their definitions and how they use these terms, almost everyone thinks everyone else is a farb and considers themselves authentic. So it's quite an interesting debate that goes on around the concept of authenticity.
And it comes to the big question of, another word that it's not a new word like farb to me, but that they regard themselves not as as reenacting somebody, but doing impressions.
That's right.
What do they mean by that?
Well, it's really an interesting thing, and I think it would surprise a lot of people on the outside to learn that reenactors don't adopt historical characters and then go and perform these real characters. Instead, they do what they call impressions of generally common soldiers, so just sort of the typical average soldier, whether it's World War I British or World War II German. And throughout an event, they don't consider themselves real soldiers, but instead they think of themselves as who they really are. So there's this kind of performance aspect to it where they're, you know, not really thinking they're reliving the past or they're other people, but they are who they are in reality.
So they're not portraying a famous soldier, Audie Murphy, for example, but rather just G.I. Joe.
Exactly. And in fact, there's kind of an attitude that they don't want to portray an Audie Murphy because they have this conception of the common soldier as being a kind of everyman or everywoman, as the case might be, who's just a typical person, isn't necessarily a hero, is somewhat, in a sense, a victim because he or she is fighting a war is sacrificing and enduring. So there's this kind of common sense of this average person at war.
One of the fascinating aspects of these people who have specialized in 20th century warfare, as you say, a lot of them came from Civil War reenactments and came to regard those as being excessively commercial.
Absolutely. In fact, a lot of these Civil War reenactors became really disgruntled with the way that the American Civil War hobby was turning into this huge enterprise where you don't have 20,000 people turn out for this wonderful day of warfare. And they felt that it was really getting away from what was the reality of war, which is tragedy, is violence. And so some of them, when they broke away, they really wanted to stress the hardship of war, the horror of war. And a lot of them wanted to do reenactments that were private, but didn't conform to the public spectators' desire for, big action and
spectacle.
So forth.
Spectacle, yeah. And at the same time, though, they are regarded by professional soldiers, at least by some professional soldiers, as amateur theatricals.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, reenactors themselves almost universally will concede that point, that they are not real soldiers. Ultimately, they cannot recreate war authentically. So they're very aware of the difference between being in a war, which they say they don't want to be in, and actually, going out and playing it or performing it.
Our number, 800-989-8255. And let's hear from Catherine, who joins us from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to comment because I do East Germany and the Berlin Wall, and about anybody who knows me knows who I am because there's only about four people in the country who do it.
And where do you do it, Catherine?
Most of the events that I've been to are around Washington, D.C. and Virginia, Maryland.
And what you do East Germany and you play an East German guard, is that?
Well, I dress up like an East German border guard. Usually, because I'm a female, I have to do an officer, which is, I'm sure not one of your guests is probably going to tell you that officers aren't looked highly upon, but I don't think that's much of a choice.
But there were women officers there, so that's what you had to do.
Yes, and the East Germans made a big deal about having more females having females in their armed forces, whereas the West Germans didn't at the time.
Why do you do it, Catherine? And in addition to why do you do it, why do you play in East German?
I had a fascination with the country, and I started, at the time that I got interested in it, the West Germans, when the country was unified, sold off the entire army. All the uniforms, all of the equipment, everything got sold. And so you would walk into surplus stores, and you could outfit yourself in authentic, real gear with, down to real underwear, although I haven't gone that far.
A lot of jokes about East German underwear, but go ahead.
I found myself camping in an East German Zeltbahn, which is a tent, in the middle of a pouring rainstorm, knowing when the tent was manufactured in 1987, and thinking, the country collapsed in 2 years.
Huh. and understanding a little bit more about it, perhaps.
Well, praying that the tent hadn't collapsed because one of our tent stakes had broken when we had tried. Our equipment is always breaking, which is part of doing that country in that time period and explaining it to spectators.
Hmm. And where do you find the Berlin Wall itself around Washington, D.C.?
There is a chunk of the Berlin Wall near a museum that's no longer in operation. I don't recall the name. We've only done pictures in front of it.
Hmm. So when you briefly tell us what an event is like.
Well, it's sort of like half camping and half acting. And I go to lots of displays of timelines. So you have the Romans on one end and us and Gulf War people on the other. And you can sort of tell what camps develop of almost by country, because I remember distinctly at my first event, British Boer War people were refusing to tell me where the firewood was because I was playing a German.
Uh-huh. So you were inauthentic in their little world.
Well, everyone is inauthentic. I dress up in entirely real gear, and I'm supposedly inauthentic. So I don't think authenticity is possible.
Catherine, thanks very much.
No problem.
Appreciate the phone call. We're talking about 20th century war reenactors. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Fritz, who's with us from Wallace, California.
Hey, how you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Hi, Fritz.
Hey, hi.
And you sound like you know Fritz.
No, I just think
Just saying hi.
No, that's my middle name. I'm German on my mother's side and Irish and Scottish on my dad's.
And are you a reenactor?
Yeah. I'm on the other side.
Which other side?
the bad side, supposedly.
Were we talking about the German army in World War II?
Yeah, the Panzer Corps.
And where do you go to participate in these reenactments?
We have an area. It's about like 10 square miles. We get in the vehicles, and we have the embattlements. And then it's like a course. We have different target positions and targets, you know. And then we have the infantry, the dismounted infantry that comes and behind the tanks and all that stuff.
There are tanks there? Real Panzers?
Yeah. No, there's a man that collects them, and he gets together with all the heavy equipment collectors, all the tanker guys, and then we usually do this like twice a year because it's a lot of work to set it up.
I'm sure it is. Fritz, I'm sure you've thought about this, but some people might take offense at Americans running around in German uniforms pretending to be German soldiers.
Well, it's a fun and games thing. Nobody gets hurt, and it's all in the good spirit.
Yep, Neil, if I can say something about that.
Go ahead, please, Jenny.
Well, I think it's interesting, especially with the German reenactors. You know, there's just a lot of fascination, I think, in our culture, in American culture, with the Germans of World War II. And most all reenactors will say that they grew up, you know, just fascinated with war.
Yeah, it's a guy thing.
Yeah, and they just, especially with Germans, they say, you know, the uniforms, the equipment, it's very intriguing.
Yeah.
And there's, I think, also some element of rebellion or maybe even shock value to doing it.
Mm.
You think that's right, Fritz?
Supposedly. Well, my heritage, my uncle on my mother's side, he was a colonel in a tanker corps. He was on the Russian front, and he was in, after the Russian front, he went down to Italy and stuff.
So.
Yeah, actually, I can add something to the heritage issue. I found that with 20th century war reenactors, over 60% of them have relatives who fought in the wars that they reenact. Mm-hmm. So not just American veterans, but all different countries represented.
Yeah. There's a camaraderie, too.
Exactly.
That goes on, too. And everybody dresses in authentic uniforms, too, as much as they can.
Well, Fritz, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Jenny, you write a lot about some of the reasons you think these men, mostly men, do this, and mostly white men.
Right.
And one of the reasons you conclude is that they are trying to control history, or at least understand it in a way.
That's right. I think there's a sense among them that the war story they've been raised on as kids, watching movies, reading books, is something that is somewhat of a mystery to them, and they want, in a way, to create their own war stories so that they can, in some sense, create their own representations of history that involve themselves, so they don't have to be in a war, but in one sense, they get to participate, if you will, in history. And I think that's a very powerful kind of sensation for them, that they now are a part of the very history they're so fascinated with.
A lot of internal contradictions as well.
Absolutely. I mean, the very issue of authenticity is one that, as some of the callers have suggested, is rife with contradiction. You know, how far do you go to portray war authentically when ultimately you know you can't portray war authentically? And ultimately, I argue that a lot of what goes on in the hobby of reenacting is men and some women trying to kind of work out issues related to social problems. Who's the most attractive? Who's the most, you know, the smartest, the most powerful? They're working out these kinds of issues about their very real and true contemporary identities under the guise, in a sense, of authenticity and a game.
Jenny Thompson, thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Jenny Thompson is the author of War Games, Inside the World of 20th Century War Reenactors. She was with us by phone from her home in Evanston, Illinois. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.